You should know what that means already. That's the best kind of notification. That's the sound of another sale on Shopify and the moment another business dream becomes a reality. Shopify is the e-commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're selling succulents or stilettos, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person so you can focus on successfully growing your business. Shopify covers every sales channel from an in-person POS system to an all-in-one e-commerce platform. It even lets you sell across social media marketplaces like TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. Packed with industry-leading tools ready to ignite your growth, Shopify gives you complete control over your business and your brand without having to learn any new skills in design or code. And thanks to 24/7 help and an extensive business course library, Shopify is there to support your success every step of the way. What's incredible to me personally, Charlotte, about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify is there to empower you with the confidence and control to revolutionize your business and take it to the next level. Now it's your turn to get serious about selling and try Shopify today. This is a possibility powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/truefaith, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/truefaith to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/truefaith.
It's the True Faith Newcastle United podcast. Newcastle came back to beat Southampton by 3-1 on another magic afternoon at St James's Park. I'm Alex. I've got Charlotte, Mick Martin and Rob to join us today to talk through what happened and why is Newcastle take another step forward toward the Champions League. First little advert for you. Come and join us on Patreon. It's £3 to £8 a month. We've got loads going on this week, reflecting on this game and building up to a monster game with Arsenal. We'll have a review of this show. We've got a full preview. We'll have Craig Hope on as well to talk about this fixture and much more. £3 to £8 a month. Charlotte, another fantastic afternoon at St James's Park. Wasn't straightforward though, was it?
No, another fantastic 45 minutes. No, it was not straightforward. That was... I really hate this. And I said this on the instant reaction after Everton. I hate this game of two halves, but it was, wasn't it? It was a game of two halves. First half was a little bit, couldn't get it going, bit difficult. And we made some changes. Eddie Howe made some changes at half time. Crowd kind of woke up a little bit, I think, for the second half. Even before the goals, the crowd definitely felt like it changed for the second half. And we got back into the game and won. So, yeah, I feel sort of wrung out a little bit, but obviously really happy.
Mick, the story after this one is going to be all about Callum Wilson. We're going to talk about Callum Wilson a lot, but do you think part of it has to be about Eddie Howe being as ruthless as that at halftime? Because I don't know many managers who've managed Newcastle who would do what he did after 45.
Yeah, it's a good point. He made the right changes, as he often does. So... yeah, so you can't criticise him for that. Ultimately, it's all about the team and the way he jiggled it around at half time. In terms of the personnel, really worked, but it just seemed to work. They seemed to come out and have a completely different mindset. I think the mindset was the main thing, which was we're going to go down your throats, and they never got out their half, did they, the second half?
It was an unbelievable turnaround, Rob. How did it look from your vantage point in the ground, which I forget where it is? So reminders, but yeah, like Mick says, and Charlotte said also, it was almost two different teams from Newcastle United first half, second half, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's in the Leeds corner, and it was a good view, and it was great, as I say, in that second half, as I said, to see us come out as a different side, and it's not the first time this season that we've seen a total turnaround from the players. We've seen Eddie Howe on the sidelines having a go at the players even when we're winning, because he still didn't think we were playing well enough under his standards. We were literally down in the concourse half time with a beer, 1-0 down, and we're literally saying Eddie Howe will have the wallpaper off those walls in there. He is telling them right now what they've done wrong, what they need to do right. And we've seen it before. We've seen the reactions, and you're going out second half hoping that those players will listen to what that man has to say. As you've mentioned, big change. Gordon off, Wilson on. We actually set it down at halftime in the concourse as well. And I said, he's come on. In fairness, Gordon, I thought he had a few chances. I think he should have scored in the first half, but like you rightly said, he was ruthless. He brought the man on. He was in form, and he got the goals and took us to a different level in that second 45 minutes.
Mick just said it there quite well. That was a massive game for Southampton. It was a massive game. And you could tell in the way they approached the game, the effort they put in, the animation of their manager on the sidelines. They only got in half-time thinking, job half done here. Get out there, second half. They had a little huddle before the second half started. And it just shows it's all bullshit, isn't it? It's all for show nonsense. That doesn't mean anything because they did make a forward pass. They didn't have a shot. That Nick Pope doesn't have to make a save second half. How Southampton, who are 1-0 up, playing with confidence, go from there into kind of just get this over. The full-time whistle was the best thing that happened to them. It was unbelievable turnaround from Newcastle United. And we'll have to talk about Callum Wilson. 4 goals this week. This is a lad who, you know, lots of people, myself included, the fall-off in his form was so great pre- and post-World Cup. You did wonder, has something gone wrong? Will he get it back? Will he ever be able to contribute toward this team the way he previously did? He's had his injury problems. He had a bad cup final. He wasn't the only one, but he didn't do himself justice that day either. And it's a little bit of a redemption story, and it looks now like he has a future at Newcastle United beyond this season. And, I mean, Mick, I'll come to you on this one. Can you drop him? Can you afford not to play him in this form heading into Arsenal next week?
I wouldn't kind of think in terms of dropping players, and at the minute, particularly Wilson and attacking players, because how's rotating them within the team, and they're playing 45 minutes, they might be playing an hour and then coming off and then playing the next game or starting the next game or not starting the next game, etc. So I think it's a, you know, with the amount of substitutes you can have now, I think the game's changed and Howe is just using what he's got in front of him. So I wouldn't even say, when he didn't start the day, I didn't even think about him being dropped. I just thought he'll play at some point. And he'll change it during the game and obviously change it at half-time. And wow, when he came on the pitch, he looked like a man possessed and changed everything, you know, just with his with his endeavour and his intensity and his appetite to drag the game towards the Southampton goal, which was, you know, he was phenomenal. And I thought we got more out of Isak that way as well on the left-hand side. Isak just looked like so much of a threat. Just been chatting to pals of mine, we're just remarking on how quick his feet are. But, you know, the two of them can play together, but maybe not two up front. One can play on. I think Wilson's going to play it down the middle, and Isak's going to play on the left. But we'll see if we're going to see a lot of those changes during games.
That's what I kind of wanted to bring up, because Wilson did change the game. Wilson scored the goals. Wilson brings a lot of power, a lot of sort of that bullying kind of feel up front. But yeah, it's Wilson and Isak, isn't it? Allowing Alexander Isak that space on the left-hand side to collect the ball. You know he can score, so if he dribbles it in and he's close to the goal, you're not worried about him then passing. You know he can score from those positions. But he just teed up some absolutely lovely balls. In fact, in the first half, you and I, Alex, were talking about this before, he teed up one of Gordon's misses. And then he teed up that first goal for Wilson. And it's just really beautiful play. And as Mick rightly says, Wilson's that sort of straight down the middle centre forward who's just there ready to collect those balls and score. And watching those two play together is really, I feel very lucky.
15 goals and 4 assists now for Callum Wilson this season. And he's missed a significant part of that through either lack of form or injury or illness. They're scary figures, and I'm just reading some stuff online that Wilson and Isak are actually the two most prolific goal scorers in the Premier League in terms of minutes played to goals, apart from Erling Haaland, who kind of is out there by himself in a whole separate category of centre forward at the minute. But these figures are exceptional. And if you're Arsenal next week, I really like the fact that you can't just train all week to deal with Alexander Isak. There's a chance, and you saw that from Southampton today. They didn't have a response to Wilson. They didn't have a response. It was almost kind of chaos was introduced in Southampton. Instead of saying, right, we might have to shift to a back five, or someone might have to drop in midfield to match him physically. Couldn't do it, didn't have an answer. That's because it's hard, and he's a good player, and Newcastle are a good team. But it's a huge advantage having two players like that in the same squad who can really ask questions of the opposition. And more often than not, and it was the same with Everton on Wednesday night, Thursday night. They didn't have an answer. A lot of teams, particularly at the bottom end of the Premier League, they might 1 week out of two have an answer to Isak or Wilson, but they don't have an answer to them both. And I think Mick's right. You are more likely to see them playing across a front three rather than playing together. But what you saw today was a real class Premier League centre forward performance from a lad, another lad who was here before the takeover, who was here under Mike Ashley and Steve Bruce. And Eddie Howe's come in and improved him. And he was pretty good before the takeover, but he's improved him, which is extraordinary. So it's an unbelievable performance. And some words from you, Rob, on Wilson.
Yeah, he's quality. And you've said it right there. That's where we want to be. Eddie Howe isn't scared to pull punches. He's not scared to drop Wilson after scoring two goals in the game. Isak comes on, scores the greatest assist anybody's ever seen. The pair of them are playing so well right now, and it's almost unusual to have two players in such great form and for Eddie Howe to not just say, you know what, screw it, we're going to play them both. He did, obviously, later on in that game, and I think we all like to see them when they are together, but Eddie Howe knows how he wants to play football. He knows the formation. He's sticking with what's been working, and I think it helps the players as well, because us as a side go into a game knowing what they've got to do. They know their role, they know who covers who, they know who runs where, and to be able to interchange two players in the form of their lives is just working out to be the perfect scenario. And that's, if not too long ago, we were having conversations on these podcasts about, do we have the depth? Did we buy enough in January? And right now, it's so satisfying to see a player like Wilson come off the bench and go, yeah, he's coming on. He will change the game. He will impact this side. We have options, and the players we're bringing on are significantly affecting and making big changes to the games.
Brilliant. It's been a brilliant day, and it's brilliant to kind of have these kind of conversations. Callum Wilson, what a player, what a performance. And I can't wait to see what Eddie does against Arsenal next week. We'll leave part one of the show there. There's some adverts now. If you want to get rid of the adverts, come and join us on Patreon for just £3 a month. Back after these.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Mick, the player who was sacrificed for the Wilson change, and what a change it was, but was Anthony Gordon, £45 million. Sean Longstaff, his exclusion today through injury, and Eddie Howe has confirmed post-game that it's not a serious injury and he should be back for Arsenal next week. But Gordon comes in, massive opportunity, What did you make of his performance and then subsequent substitution?
I think he was our only threat in there for maybe the first 20 minutes of the game. I thought he was really great going down the left-hand side. And in fact, the lad I got the match with said he could be Alan Saint-Maximin's replacement rather than someone to play alongside of him in some kind of new formation or whatever. So I thought he did really, really well. I think what was really unfortunate was the good chance he missed. I think that would have changed the whole dynamics, not only of the game, but also the conversation about him as well. So, you know, there's people kind of saying, oh, well, he hasn't done this, he hasn't done that. That goes on the inside of the post and it's like, right, he's up and running. He just needs that moment when he does get a goal or he does something really special when it'll happen for him. It will happen for him. It didn't happen for Isak at first. And it will happen for Anthony Gordon. I'm absolutely certain of it. And he will get another chance this season. What I really kind of struggled to get a hold of was why he was switched, why he switched sides. Mm. I didn't get that. I didn't think Murphy did much when he came on the left-hand side in the first half. And I don't think Gordon got much on the right-hand side either. So I didn't think that worked. So obviously House played him on both sides and thought, right, I'm going to take him off at half time and try something new. And the new was Isak on the left-hand side, and that worked. So he was sacrificed for the team. I don't think he had a bad game. This is what happens in elite sports. You have, technical changes are made. He'll get another chance. I wish him all the very best. I think he's got tremendous talent. And in the early part of the game, I thought he was terrific. I thought he was going to really make a difference. Unfortunately, it didn't happen for him.
I feel a bit like, some of the comments on social media, and I know that can kind of get blown out of proportion, and you can kind of feel like that's the consensus when it's just a small minority of people. But some people are saying he didn't have a good game. He lacks that end product. What have we bought him for? And I feel like that's really harsh, because as you say, Mick, there, he was really our only threat in the first half. He had two good shots on top, or just wide of the goal. One hit the woodwork and one went wide. And I get needing to bring on an out-and-out striker like Callum Wilson and wanting to retain Isak because we needed that cover on the left-hand side. So I understand why he was brought off. I think he's also a bit of a confidence player, and if he didn't get those goals, could his head have... He still needs a bit more time under Eddie Howe. He's only been here since January. We've seen him get a little bit stroppy before. We know he still needs to develop, but I definitely didn't think he had a bad game. I think it's a really big call, and the right call, actually. Obviously, we won 3-1 to have brought him off, but digging him out for his performance, I don't think is right.
He's 21 years old. You know, he make a great point about Isak. Even Bruno, when he first came, how many, it took him 6 games to get in the team.
Yeah.
We are in a very fortunate position that we can sign players for £45 million and we don't need them to hit the ground running instantly. We signed Joe Linton for £40 million and it looked like a huge mistake for a long time. And that all, there was like a cloud above the club because it was finally gone out and spent money and it had gone badly. We're not in that position now because we have other players contributing. We have other players to carry him a little bit until that point when he can contribute at the same level. But also, as Mick said, he was the biggest threat in the first half. Real shame not to score that goal, and there was also a couple of other moments which were quite nice where he could have done a little bit better. But ultimately, again, like you said, Charlotte, Newcastle have got options. Joe Linton could have gone wide left. Alan Saint-Maximin's injured. If he'd been there, he'd have been an option. Joe Willock can go wide left. You can switch Murphy there, and then he goes with Isak. So it keeps the opposition guessing, and it must be really hard to defend against. But, you know, it does seem to be a bit of a social media thing with Gordon. I think Newcastle fans, a lot of them at the match anyway, just want him to do really, really well as quickly as possible. He's got everyone's support, and the fans were singing his name there in the first half in the corner, so no issues there. Rob, in terms of the first half, what did you think was missing? Do you have to give Southampton some credit, or what went wrong for Newcastle?
It was an interesting one because I think we've obviously seen us score quite a few goals this week, and everyone was kind of walking in and thinking, how many can we get today? So I feel like there was a little bit about that. I think I often, although it is bank holiday, I think the crowd got a little bit more excited maybe after the halftime pints, but I often feel at 2 o'clock on a Sunday, the games are a little bit quieter than a standard 3 p.m. Saturday. Everybody's out, everyone's in. Felt like the game felt a little bit slow to start from both the players and us. I mean, going into it, and I said it beforehand, is Southampton are looking at this game and going, wow, Spurs conceded 20 goals in 5 minutes. Let's make sure we don't do that today. And that was the thing. Spurs walked in, sleepwalking. I think Southampton were fully aware of what to expect coming to St. James's Park. We have to be fully alert to make sure it doesn't happen. And they were doing a decent job of keeping us out as the game kind
of... You don't sound sure.
Yeah, because that would insinuate that we were the team pressing.
Right.
Because really, they actually were pushing us just as much as we were pushing them. So it was quite 50-50, but we seemed a little bit slower than I would have liked. You think of how great we've been in a few games, and it just seems with us as... It almost just takes that one to get us going. And we've spoken about the Gordon chances in that first half. He had three, all of coming down the left-hand side. One hit the side netting, one hit the post. Mm. I fully believe that had Gordon finished one of those chances, we would have just taken over that game and saw it through to the end. But Southampton were the team who put the ball in the back of the net from what I could see all the way across the other side of the stadium was a fairly simple goal that we didn't block out.
It was an annoying goal to concede that one. Ball got taken off Bruno in midfield and then it wasn't great defending. But we made up for it.
The lad ghosted in front of Trippier, who probably should have done better, but can't be perfect all the time. Shame not to keep another clean sheet, because really in terms of the balance of the game, Southampton offered very, very little apart from that smash and grab breakaway goal. I mean, Nick Pope made a save first minute or two and I think in the second half, Southampton only touched the ball in our half once, and that was in the 90th minute, which is damning if you're chasing the game to try and stay in the Premier League. But it happens, Charlotte. You want to talk about the atmosphere and maybe just the start of the game after the week Newcastle have had. It just did feel a little bit flat.
Yeah, it did. And I think Rob kind of touched on it there, the 2 p.m. kickoff and the Sunday. It is a bit weird and awkward, and it is a bank holiday, so maybe you might have thought people might be a bit more lively. But it was, I think Luke Edwards tweeted something I never thought would happen has happened, and Newcastle have started this game expecting to win, and so have their fans. And it was a bit quiet. Obviously the flag display was great. They had the giant flag on the Leasers, which was a good way to start the game, but sort of settled into it. And there was, I think, because Southampton are bottom of the table and we're third, and there was just kind of an expectation. They were terrible midweek. This will be fine. We'll be fine. And then it became kind of just we were talking just before and Mick pointed out, it's almost like a cup game crowd, very chattery. There's a lot of chatter in the crowd. There weren't loads of chants. There wasn't a lot of singing. Certainly not where I was. I was sort of close to the Leasers corner of the East Stand today. And we definitely woke up in the second half, as I said before the goal. Obviously the goals help, but it was before the goal. It was a sort of recognition that we've made a change on the pitch. We also need to make a change in the stands, and we need to get behind St. James's Park is such a difficult place to come. Let's actually make it a difficult place to come. And we did pick up, but yeah, it was an odd one in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, it happens, and I expected to win today because Newcastle are good and Southampton aren't. I don't think there's anything wrong with going and expecting to win the game, and I think the players also deserve that kind of expectation. They've been very, very good for a very long time, and Southampton haven't. They're a pretty bad team, as it turns out. Sometimes it's hard, though, isn't it, because Southampton didn't really offer anything at all from an attacking perspective. And games Newcastle have struggled in this season tend to have been against lesser opposition. If you look at the points we've dropped at home, Palace, Leeds, Bournemouth, when teams kind of don't come out and when they make the midfield very combative, Bruno struggles, can't get in the ball, can't get any passes going. The centre-backs have to push up quite forward. The full-backs have to push far up the pitch because you've got to try and break them down. You leave yourselves open to the counter-attack, which is essentially what happened. And Mick, you said it reminded you a little bit, didn't you, of those games that struggle to break teams down. What is it you think Newcastle can do better in those circumstances, apart from bring Callum Wilson on and change the game from that perspective?
Well, I think we've got a kind of, it's a mindset thing. Again, I'll kind of bang this drum for it, but we've had this before this season. We've, as you rightly say, Alex, with the Bournemouth game, the Palace game, except we kind of, they're not the glamour games, or they're not the games where we kind of bounce up to St James's Park for Man United or Spurs or Liverpool, etc. They're a different type of game, and they're a different type of test for the players. So the players are just the same as us, I think. They'll be thinking, this is Man United, this is Tottenham, this is Arsenal. We've got to be up for it a little bit more. And what I detected in the team, how we started the game today, was there was a degree of sloppiness with the passing. I thought there were mistakes that were Shaw made a couple in the first half. Trippier even did, and Bruno did for the goal. And, you know, and I felt the goal that Southampton scored was coming. Although they'd never breached our defence, I felt as though there was something not quite right in the middle of the park. And when we made a mistake, they were very quickly up the park. We've beat them four times this season, but I think they've given us a game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know, every time we've played them, I think they've given us a game. And I thought there was lots of energy in their midfield in particular. I thought they were quite physical. The referee didn't help. I thought he was awful. You know, then they were doing what a team at the bottom would do, particularly when they've got something to hang on to with about breaking the play up and wasting time, etc. I'm not going to criticise them for that. I've seen Newcastle do it plenty of times, so I'm not going to slaughter them for that. But we just didn't seem to have the tools to cope with it until half time. And obviously, but I think the key thing, you change the personnel, but the mindset changed dramatically in the second half. And that's not the first time that's happened this season. So we're starting games sometimes a little bit not kind of in the wide awake club, so to speak. I think in terms of answering your question, long way around, is that we need to start the games a little bit more on the front foot, rather than kind of wait to see what they're doing and then get a rocket from Eddie Howe at half time, because there'll be a game this season where that's too late. We might be 2-0 down at half time. Villa was exactly that. We weren't able to claw ourselves back into the game. Mm-hmm. So and if we start slowly against Arsenal next week, we'll forget about winning that game as well.
There is that theme, isn't there? Because, you know, Brentford were poor in the first half. Brentford could have been further ahead. How makes, again, the same change at half time. Even Everton on Thursday, Everton were in the game first half in a way that they weren't second half. Mm. I think there's a couple of things to discuss there. Number one, opposition teams are allowed to play well and give you a game and make things difficult for you. And you could also, although I agree Newcastle have to start games better on the whole, we are better at finishing games than the opposition. That we get stronger as the game goes on. Teams seem to tire. You look at a player like Joe Willock today, who was very quiet first half and is just absolutely everywhere second half. They couldn't keep up with him. Charlotte, you were talking to me about him. What did you make of his performance?
Joe Willock, just every time, I just think he's so good. I can't wait. I want to see his heat map. I've been looking on the I find those really interesting. I really like looking at them. But I can't get over that he's only 23. There's so much more for him to give. And his performances are just getting more and more mature. He's looking for the ball. He was the reason Callum Wilson scored that second goal that he got. And it's just this really nice little tap back. And it's intentional. He's being crowded out by two players and he knows Wilson's there. I just think he's a really intuitive player. He knows he's there. He taps it out. Wilson runs up and collects it and obviously scores. I just love watching him. I think he's... I think he's not a flashy player. I think he just gets his head down and kind of it really like works really hard. And I really love that in a player. I think that's a very Eddie Howe type of player. I can't wait to see how he develops in this team because, as I say, he's so young and there's still so much more we can get from him.
Yeah, absolutely. And really good to highlight that impact on the third goal. And, you know, he was really unlucky himself, Willock, to not get on the score sheet at the end of the game. And that's 13 goals now for Newcastle in the last 7 days. And a player like Joe Willock is just absolutely instrumental to that. I also think we should talk about the absence of Sean Longstaff. Newcastle have a guaranteed starter drop out the team at relatively short notice for this one. Newcastle ultimately did come up with an answer. But, mate, you're really pleased that he's back next week, aren't you?
Absolutely, because I think he's a player that is valued when he's out of the team more than when he's in it. It seems from some quarters. I mean, obviously he didn't play at Villa and they got murdered there. He didn't play today, and I thought he was really, really notable by his absence in the first half because of his running. And I thought Bruno probably does better alongside Longstaff. I think I'll make that kind of shout out now for Sean Longstaff. I think he's a very, very energetic player. He gets all over the park. He adds so much in terms of his work rate. Just to say, while I've got the mic on, just to pick up on Charlotte's point about Joe Willock, what I've noticed about him, all of a sudden, it seems as though he's massive. He's got these great big shoulders on him and chest, and physically he's just developed. He's looking like a bit of a beast. You know, he could get in the ring with Joe Linton, which would be people would pay to watch, wouldn't they? So I'm looking for the similar thing from Isak. Maybe next season he'll develop physically. So we're really, really physically strong. Longstaff will probably add that to himself as well. But he's just got so much energy. He was a big miss today, I thought.
Anyone else, Rob, in this part of the show, you want to highlight any players you thought did well today?
I think generally speaking, it's great to come off and talk about some of these players that are just playing with confidence and shining as well. You talk about the transfer windows, who were bought, who we're looking at, and I think it's the Newcastle way, or the way I like to see it, is we've got some young guys in there who we haven't gone out and bought the Galacticos yet. But for now, the guys we've brought in are players that Eddie Howe wants to work with, wants to mould and shine on through. And I think it's a great thing that the way we're playing right now, and that kind of touches back onto the, we didn't have a great first half. Eddie Howe has to get them in and go, hang on, guys, you need to play better. And it's a bit of, you know, the sides of a coin. You know, what one side is, these are young guys who are finding their way a little bit. And at times I would actually like to see someone like Trippier and Callum Wilson to not do a Zinchenko and ask everybody to huddle around and it's all going to be okay. But we need some of the guys in there to, you know, as great as Bruno is and as great as Joe Linton is, they are still young, upcoming players. Mm. It's great that they can play fresh, freely. Willock has shown his skills. Isak's doing it as well. And that's kind of the two sides of it. I think it'll be very interesting when we finish in the top four and get Champions League that some of these guys will see the step up. And I think you need a player like Trippier and Callum Wilson to keep them in. And I think that's why Eddie Howe's been so pivotal in those halftime team talks to say, come on, guys, you do have the ability. You can show it. And there's only a few to go, but I'm hoping we're going to see a lot more from all of them.
I'll just talk about Bruno quickly. First of all, absolutely hilarious that he got given that goal. If you're in the ground, we saw the goal going
too far away. I couldn't
own
see
goal.
It.
There we go. A bit of luck. Sven Botman, who should have scored earlier than that, he kind of found it funny. Everyone ran to Botman. All of a sudden, the bloke on the tannoy says Bruno Guimarães, and you're just like, that, you got one job. Watch a replay. Being very harsh, but it was funny. Charlotte, you suggested that maybe they just wanted to make it a special day for Bruno.
Yeah, because he brought he had his little baby with him. Did you see?
Just
so I think his baby's only about 6 months old, and as a special mascot today, so Bruno carried him on the pitch and had him in a little Bruno top. So I think they just were like, let's give him a goal because his kid's here. And we'll just do that. It was good today though, Bruno. I think, you know, we look at Isak and talk about how balletic he is on the ball. Bruno's another one who really dances with it and dances around people, and he is a joy to watch. They did try and shut down the midfield today. That was certainly their game plan, but I just love watching him sort of weave in and out of players with the ball. It's great.
I like how hard he is. He gets kicked a fuck every single game.
Yeah, he does.
Every single game. No wonder his ankles are causing him grief. And that's one of the key things about the scouting and the signing was it's great to sign a Brazilian, isn't it? But we've got to have two of the hardest Brazilians going in our team. And you know, like you said today, Charlotte, Southampton came in and just thought any time a Newcastle midfielder gets the ball in that first half, there's going to be two lads, and they're not fussed what to kick them out of the ball. And the referee has to try and look after our lads a little bit better. But I thought he was really good second half. Once he starts popping the ball off, playing 1-2s with people, there's very little the opposition can do to stop it without overcommitting. And then that's why I feel you saw Isak get so much space second half, because they became so concerned with our midfield playing so well, all of a sudden the wide lads are left to their own devices.
While we're on Bruno, just because I'm looking at my Twitter in real time, he has tweeted himself, not my best day at the office today, but it does happen sometimes. Was he?
Was well, it was the girl, wasn't it? Probably, he's probably thinking about the girl still.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Yeah. Well, we'll leave it there for part two of the show. Back after this from Charlotte with part three. It's the True Faith Newcastle United podcast. Newcastle came back to beat Southampton by 3-1 on another magic afternoon at St James's Park. I'm Alex. I've got Charlotte, Mick Martin and Rob to join us today to talk through what happened and why is Newcastle take another step forward toward the Champions League. First little advert for you. Come and join us on Patreon. It's £3 to £8 a month. We've got loads going on this week, reflecting on this game and building up to a monster game with Arsenal. We'll have a review of this show. We've got a full preview. We'll have Craig Hope on as well to talk about this fixture and much more. £3 to £8 a month. Let's talk about the Champions League. Tell me, Mommy Mart, I won't be home for tea. I'm going to Italy is now the song at home and away games. And it's you know, I think it's long been decided that the team can't think like that. They can't talk like that. You look at Liverpool now beating Spurs 3-1 at the time of recording. They were 3-0 up after 14 minutes. Deja vu for Spurs. But it looks like they're fucked as a football club in a number of ways. But, you know, Liverpool play today. If they win that game, they play twice before we play Arsenal. And then they're only 3 points behind us. If we got beat today, they would have gone level on points. We'll have a game in hand or two on Liverpool when we do kick off against Arsenal. But it does seem, I don't know who wants to talk about it, Charlotte. There is kind of an acceptance, I feel, Newcastle have 65 points, which is the most points they've achieved in a Premier League season since 11-12, when Newcastle finished on 65 points. And we've still got four or five to play. You know, it looks like it's more and more unlikely that Newcastle won't be in the Champions League. Where are you at with it?
Yeah, that's a very like nice way of putting it. It looks unlikely that we won't. Yes, it's really weird to be looking at the table and just thinking like, oh no, Man U won. That means that they're sort of, you know, literally last season I was looking at the bottom of the table and thinking, oh God, we're going to drop points here. Where do I? Oh, it's hard because I'm not a particularly superstitious person, but I feel like by talking about it, I'm jinxing it. I do feel like that is there's an element of that. But it does look unlikely that we won't finish in a Champions League place. I can't see. We've got a couple of hard games. The ones I would identify are going to be Arsenal and going to be Brighton. Those are going to be difficult, but they are at home. So that adds an advantage, I think, to us. And the other games, I think we can pick up points. I think Liverpool have not a difficult run of games coming up, so they might pick up points there. Man United, they don't have a particularly difficult run either. I think a couple of games, I think they've also got to play Brighton and a couple of other teams. So I'm just hoping they just, you know, shit the bed a little bit with a couple of those and we just stick to the form we're in. I just want to focus on the form we're in. Look at the games we've been playing, Aston Villa aside. We have a solution to most of the problems that we've been presented with in the last few games that we've played. So just have to trust the process. I think we will. I think we will.
Mick, thoughts on where Newcastle are in this Champions League chase?
I don't think it's over until it's over. I hear people talking about, you know, we're definitely in it. And I think that's crazy talk. We've got to do the business. I don't see any sign of nerves in the team at all. I don't see them kind of getting the shakes, you know, like previous Newcastle teams have at various different points. They seem a very grounded lot. They seem to be the personification of the manager, let's be honest. So we just need to... There's 15 points to play for. You know, we've got a cushion and we need to get to... We need to knock the other team, well, Liverpool, out there. Liverpool and Man United, Liverpool in particular, I think Spurs are doing it to themselves. Mm. We just need to knock Liverpool out of the game as soon as we possibly can. So we win the next two games and we've virtually done that, haven't we? So, you know, that's what we've just got to focus on our own games. You know, supporters, we're always going to look at the table and fixtures and who's got what and who's in form, etc. Newcastle we're in a position now, 5 games left, just go out and win them and win them as quickly as we can, starting with Arsenal next week. We knock Arsenal out off the top, and I think that's that is very, very doable, because they haven't, I think they're not going to win the league, are they? And I think that's kind of coming to their realisation. So they're on the wobble. We can beat Arsenal next Sunday and get that one down. And then we're just looking for collecting the points. Just win the games. It sounds simple, doesn't it? We've just got to concentrate on how we prepare for matches and win them all. Arsenal's, they're tough. They're a great side. Brighton are a great side. Leeds will be a horrible place to go to where they're fighting for their lives. And Elland Road can be a very, very daunting place to go. We've got Leicester. It's St James's Park. We've got to go to Chelsea. Chelsea cannot buy a win, but they might be different by then. So, you know, it all changes. But I don't want to be going to Chelsea last game of the season looking for points. I want it all done and dusted by then. And I think it will be. Just win, Newcastle. Just win. Keep winning.
Absolutely, and that's good advice. And I think Liverpool, looking at their fixtures, I think you're right, Mick. Spurs have knocked themselves out. Villa made a lot of noise, but, you know, we find ourselves 11 points ahead of them, and we've got a game in hand. They're not going to catch us. Liverpool are the one people are worried about because of their fixture list, because, a bit like Man City, there's always been an assumption that Man City could put together 8 wins in a row from nowhere. They have done. Mm-hmm. You know, Liverpool can get a maximum of 71 points this season. So we're 6 points off that. So you'd say 7 points from our last 5 games, which is very doable. Yeah. It does it. And the way to do that, like you said, is just do it as quickly as possible. Let's really enjoy that. I want to see that last home game of the season, Monday night, stress-free. If there is stress, fine. Let's deal with it. But it would be great. A bit like last season, actually, where we were able to kind of put on a show, because we just had to go out there and play to our potential and play to the best we could. And we gave Arsenal a beating that their fans still talk about and still harbour a grudge against. So it'd be really interesting if we can go and do that to them again and really get a bit of a psychological edge over them. Rob, where are you with it? Are you already looking at kind of time off work and all this for next year, or is it get the job done first?
No, I've got to echo what the guys have said there, which is it's not done till it's done. But I think as much as Eddie Howe will and is conducting himself in the way that we have got to know Eddie Howe, he will not speak of anything other than the game that's next up. I think that, as we've said, the players represent the same. They go out and play game by game. They know what they have to do. But then you've also got Joe Linton and Bruno having little giggles in interviews about what could they be doing next. And I think it's a very real reality that the players are aware of. They're trained. They are mirroring their manager. They will not overdo things. But you can see there's a little bit of that in there. And if you're telling me that Eddie Howe and Mad Dog Tyndall aren't having beers for the bank holiday weekend celebrating, you know, what is to come, I think they are. I think Eddie Howe's very clever. He won't publicly show it. And I will not publicly on this podcast say that I definitely think it's happening. But behind closed doors, I think most people in that squad are not shaking hands just yet, but maybe a little cheers with a beer and thinking we're on the right road. Let's make sure it happens.
Indeed. And it'll be a good day. I can still actually remember the last time we did it in 2003. I think we beat Birmingham City at home 1-0, which was a nice day in, under Steve Bruce, as it was. That was a long time ago, basically. It was 17 years since we've done it. So it's absolutely crucial for the future of this football club. The news announced this week, although it hasn't been confirmed by the club, new shirt sponsor, £25 million, as reported by Martin Hardy in The Times. You know, these kind of sponsorship deals are always more lucrative if you get in to competitions like the Champions League and go further through them. And the football club is in that, it's on that trajectory. It has Champions League players, has a Champions League manager, we think. It's got a stadium fit for the Champions League. It's got a fan base fit for the Champions League. Everything's moving in the right direction, and we should be there. I also think we're the third best team in the league, and it would be nice to finish above Man United. Like you say, Charlotte, they've got an easy run in, but they're also capable of just shitting the bed like they did on Thursday at Tottenham. We will leave it there, though. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you all. Much more to be talked about from this fixture in our review podcast on Patreon, which will be out tomorrow night. Come and join us on there, £3 to £8 a month. We'll be back with this show after Arsenal, which is a huge game for the reasons Mick talked about, next Sunday. So speak to you all then. Bye-bye.